Hello, hello. Another episode of Funnel Cut Grill. This is episode 029 with Thomas Grove Carter. Thomas works at a place in London called Trim Editing, and they do, you know, commercials and music videos and I think even some feature films. He contacted me through Twitter and had been working on some projects, and he said, hey, I'd love to talk to you on the grill and share some war stories. So we got together late one night. You know, the time difference between California and London makes it a little awkward, but we made that work, and it was a great conversation. The conversation runs a little long, so I'm not going to waste your time here. So let's go right into the interview with Thomas Grove Carter. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So, Thomas, how are you this evening? Or actually, it's morning for you, yeah?
It is morning here. Yeah, it's quite early.
Yeah, and where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Paris, but I live in London. I'm just over here for the weekend.
You get around. The last time
we
tried to hook up, you were like, "Oh no, I'm busy. I think you were in Berlin or something."
Yeah, we were shooting in Berlin.
So, you know, we crossed paths on Twitter. You were listening to the show, I think the thing that I was most intrigued by, one, I've seen, you know, your site, the Trim Editing, and very impressive. So tell me about Trim Editing. What's your company like?
So it's quite a small offline house in London. We just purely deal with like offlines for music videos and commercials. And we're out in East London. It's a really cool, small, friendly place.
So it's interesting that you actually refer to yourself as an offline company. You're just doing the cuts and then you're sending them off for finishing elsewhere?
Yeah, kind of all the grading, sound work, special effects, anything like that will be done elsewhere at kind of places in and around London. So you've got kind of big post houses like The Mill and MPC. They'll do all the... all of that kind of stuff. So we purely just do the offline work on it. I guess the type of work we're doing is like high end commercials or music videos. Like when I say high end, I mean sort of like high end UK TV commercials, I guess.
Right.
So the directors will have relationships with colorists and with sound people and all those kind of things. So we end up working back and forth with those kind of people quite a lot. And
I think that's really interesting because a lot of times I know that in my edits, you know, we actually finish. When it leaves my fingers, it's done. And a lot of times I feel like I'm really getting mired down in like I'll get to the end of an edit and then I just look at the audio and I'm like, I really don't want to. I really don't want to do – why can't it just sound good? And I would love to have – the type of jobs or the budgets where I could just pass that off and say, here, make more better.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know, it is really nice actually. We always try and push, especially the sound side. We always try and push that as much as possible in the offline.
Right.
Just because it's so tight. Not that grade isn't as well, but because the sound's so tied to the picture.
Sure.
I don't know. There's quite a few different edits where if you took away the sound design or the way it's cut with that track or the way we've broken down the music, it just wouldn't work if you had it different. So and also nowadays as well, with the way clients are, people don't really know how to look at a pure offline anymore. They don't understand that raw looks raw. You can't say, you can say as much as you like, oh, this, by the way, caveat as much as you like and say, oh, this is just an offline. People will be like, So it's looking a little dark, or the sound's it's kind of empty. The sound, but anyway, so we do have to push it quite far, but it will all sort of be redone.
Yeah.
It is really nice to be able to do that and send it off. It's quite because then when you get it back as well, you get to see something different to what you sent off in a way. It's nice to have like another level of finishing done in it. But it's really different to. Like listening to a lot of your shows and then reading a lot online, because I work in this world, there's a lot of stuff that I read that I'm kind of like, oh, I don't really feel like I'd need that feature. Like when people talk about the color board being a bit shit and all the other stuff, I'm kind of like, well, it works really well for me. And then I realize that there's a lot of people who use it
as a finishing tool. Yeah.
Well, and then there's all the kind of people I work with, like other offline editors and stuff, when Final Cut first came out, the first thing everyone was saying was, you can't do an EDL.
Right.
And like now I look back, I'm like, that was such a boring thing to not like Final Cut for.
Yeah.
Like, because it can't make a, you know, obviously you now have plugins and different things that can do that. But it's really funny that there's a whole world of people who still, you know, because we still send off EDLs for our stuff.
Well, let's back up a little bit. How long have you been doing this? What's your background? What's your history?
So I started in music videos. I did a degree in film and video production.
Okay.
And editing was kind of the thing that I liked most, or was, yeah, I really enjoyed the whole process, but editing was the one that I kind of, I don't know, I always ended up doing it. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll be an editor then, or I'll try and be an editor. Right. And then I worked in, I got a job as a runner in London and kind of worked, you know, as a runner and did all that kind of stuff. And at the same time I was, in post houses.
Yeah.
And at the same time I was, you know, cutting some music videos and short films for friends, you know, and then one or two of those friends started directing better music videos. And I got randomly, I can't remember how now, I got in contact with an editor at another edit house, a place called Family Editing, this guy called Vid, and he sort of became my mentor, and I used to send off my little music video cuts to him and get feedback, and he'd send feedback, and it was this back and forth thing. And eventually I went and became a runner at his company and sort of began to sort of pick up more and more editing work while I was there.
Yeah, I'm going to sound like,
I'm
going to sound like a total tool here, but by runner, what exactly do you mean?
Oh, so I mean like working in the post house, making tea for people, getting the lunches.
Okay.
You know, sort of dealing with the client.
Gotcha. All right.
The hospitality side of it.
Right.
Which is how most people get into it over here in
London. Oh, yeah. No. I think a lot of people do. I think we would normally call that, I think, a production assistant.
Okay, cool.
Which sounds a little bit more elaborate, but no, I get it. Yeah. And that's what you have to do. And frankly, this has been my observation with, you know, we use the term democratization, the democratization of this technology where it becomes more and more available to more and more people people don't understand what I refer to as the machine, you know, the big machine, the production machine. And so they're just used to like pulling out their little toy camera, their little 60D or whatever, and they cut their little stuff in their iMovie or their Final Cut Pro, and they all of a sudden, you know, they're like, I'll call them a credit card DP. Just because you can buy the camera doesn't mean you deserve the title, you know, but they've never worked in the machine. They don't understand the hierarchy, or they don't understand, you know, how a client's wishes are going to be, you know.
I think the client side is quite a big one as well, because like it's probably half of our job is just sort of getting on with people, I think.
Oh yeah, like, maybe more.
You know, if a director's gonna have to sit in a room with me for 3 weeks or whatever, it doesn't, like, if they have a crap time with you, I could probably be a worse editor than someone down the hall, and yet if they had twice as much fun with me, it might be, you know, I might get the next job.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's not to say that, you know, I think all my job is like that, or you can be a crappy editor, because you can't, but it all sort of falls into the same thing. So when you get people who have just worked for themselves and don't know how to try stuff out,
If you were a crappy editor but really fun to be with, you're more likely to get jobs than a great editor who's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, completely. And I think the other thing is, like, when I did it as well, but when you first come out of university or wherever you come from,
right,
you come out with these big sort of lofty ideas, like, I'm a filmmaker now, I'm going to be an editor, and you sort of have to have someone take the wind out yourselves a little bit before you actually become good at any of that stuff.
Well, there's the 10,000 hour thing. Until you do your 10,000 hours, you know, you really don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Although you might think you do. Okay, yeah. So how did you get hooked up with Trim Editing? How did you find them? They find you?
Trim actually approached me and asked me if I wanted to join. Just because I'd met one of the other editors sort of online over Vimeo or something, I think.
Yeah.
And then we've been chatting for years. And because, and actually just being in those sort of editor's circles as well, going to like maybe an awards deal or you go to like a production company's party and things like that, everyone sort of knows roughly who everyone is and you all kind of bump into each other.
Yeah.
And I think I was just at a point where they thought I could fit quite nicely into the company. And that was about a year ago. So they approached me, and then obviously had meetings.
Yeah,
and
it
stuff.
Seemed. Looking at the website, it seems like this sort of collective of talent.
It is. Yeah, and it's really good. We're kind of quite. I don't know what it's like over in the States, but over here, when you like, this is going to sound really stupid, but when you have lunch, everyone sort of sits in their edit suite and has lunch. Whereas over here, we've got, at Trim, we've got like a massive dining room table. So we all get out together and have lunch together.
Oh, you know what?
If we can.
Lunch is very important around, at least where we work. I mean, our office has three suites and a dining room table. And everybody eats together,
Is it like that everywhere in America, or is it kind of
in a lot of places? You know, I think one of the coolest one of the facilities I used to work at years and years ago, they used to have a really large lunch area with like a ping pong table and a pool table, and then what they had they had like little booths, and there was a booth for each edit suite, and so you kind of tended to stay in your group, if you will, but there might be four suites going. Where I work, it's a big communal table, and it's a great, the producers from various companies, sit and chat, and editors are trading war stories, and it if you don't get along in that crowd, you're not going to last long. You just don't.
And also the reason I mentioned it, the dinner table in the first place, is that it's kind of, you just get to meet the other directors and you get to meet the other editors, and there's creative chat going on. And then, if an editor's not free, a director might be comfortable with working with you, even if they never have, because they've spent, however many lunches together with you and things like that. You get
exactly.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's hard to describe how important that is, and it seems, it might seem sort of frivolous, but no, I totally agree with you about that.
Yeah.
There's something very primal and communal about sitting down to share a meal with people.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's talk about Final Cut 10. When did you first start using it?
So I downloaded it on the first day.
Yeah.
But didn't. But I only really, I think I used it on my first job about, probably wasn't till last July maybe.
Okay.
I think that was the first. But I'd had it on the back burner from day one. I was a bit. I did that thing where you downloaded it and sort of cocked your head at the interface and was like, and I don't know, it may be because I'm a little bit of an Apple fanboy, but I kind of, because I think a lot of people just chucked it out, forgot about it, moved to Avid or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was always a bit like, well, I can't imagine that Apple would fuck us over this badly. and then as time went on, I thought, man, maybe they have. And then, but we always had it on the back burner. I kept reading like little things every now and again, like from Larry. I think I got Larry Jordan training at the time as well. Uh-huh. And there were things that I really thought were cool. I think the one thing I would always show people is the way that audio would jump out of the way if you moved it. Everyone would always come, this for 2 years, people come in and go, so that Final Cut's terrible, isn't it? And I would always be like, maybe, but maybe not. It's kind of all right. And then I'd say, oh, but look, you can do this. Just think what you'd have to do in Final Cut 7. You'd have to move those 10 clips down a few layers. Then you drag it out. And people would be like, okay, yeah, but it's still a piece of shit, isn't it? I'd be like, no. And then for a long time, it was like, well, why aren't you working in it then? And I'd have to kind of say, well, yeah, I'm waiting for it to be ready for me.
Mature a little. So what were you using before 10?
Final Cut 7.
Okay.
Exclusively. And then actually in the last at Trim, we're kind of – We've got an Avid Isis for shared. We've got about six suites, and then we've got an Isis that is shared between all the suites. But we're all using a lot of – it was sort of 50-50 actually, 50-50 Final Cut 7 and Avid.
Okay.
And then a few months ago, the guys at Trim made a decision that we should probably – like Final Cut 7, whether it was still working or not, was going to die, and we should probably – just start using what we were going to use in the future. So just for our assistants and things, most of us moved all our stuff to Avid.
So as the company, the decision was made to move to Avid. So what drew you into Final Cut 10?
just because I don't like Avid that much.
Yeah.
But also it's a company-wide decision, but it's kind of like a, you know, if you want to use a different thing, it's not a huge deal. We still use Final Cut 7 right. on certain jobs. But I think the main thing was to try and get us all up to speed, because I actually didn't really know Avid that well before, you know, about a year ago.
Right.
And I'm actually really glad I sort of was pushed into using it more, because now I've got that skill. I can cut in Avid almost as fast as I could in Final Cut 7. So that's great.
Yeah.
So I pick up projects from other people, and you know, so that's really good. So, and I think, you know, I don't know how the future will go. We'll probably always. I think Avid will always be the main. May always be the main thing there. How did I get into Final Cut 10? I think there's just so many like cool things about it and good features. There's too much good stuff to completely ignore it. So, for the bad stuff, or what you considered bad stuff.
So what was the first project that you actually did in 10, what made you make that decision to use it?
I did a couple of jobs that were quite small or no budget.
Uh-huh.
So I was able, and that sort of gave me the freedom to say to the directors, well, look, you've got no money. So I'm giving you my time anyway. So I'm just going to use this. Just so you know, I'm just going to use this. So, it, you know,
give it a go.
If I'm a bit slower than usual, that's why. So that was one thing. But then also I did a commercial that was just one. They're all like, it was if people were using a kind of tablet.
Right.
It was a new tablet, sort of low-budget tablet computer, and it was all filmed from the tablet's point of view with a GoPro. So all the footage was just looking up at people's faces, and each advert was just one 20-second shot. So yeah. It was super, in terms of what the actual, there was no real editing. It was just sort of selecting the best bits and, you know, making them with end frames and putting them all together. And,
right.
You know. So I did that. It was quite, in a way, it was quite a big job, but editing-wise, it was quite a simple job. So that was the first commercial I did on it, just because it was easy and it was dealing with a lot of GoPro footage, and then we had to sync sound. We used sort of auto syncing sound, you know, the waveforms.
Right.
So at the time I was still on Final Cut 7, I think. So that felt like a good, you know, it was mainly a time thing. I was like, well, this is taking ages to sync up in Final Cut 7. I'm going to try it in 10. Lo and behold, I just clicked a few buttons and everything, 18 hours of rushes were in sync, pretty much.
Yeah.
Not, it wasn't that easy, but.
Yeah, you know. I'm always impressed. Even when some of the scratch audio is really crap, sometimes I'm amazed that it syncs it up.
Yeah. I mean, you still have to select the two correct clips.
Right.
I didn't realize that to begin with. It'd be really nice if you could just select 10 video clips and 10 audio clips, and it would work out which two to marry up. But I think it seems to, maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's better now, but I think it seems to get a little bit confused. You have to like select slate one, take one, audio right. and video. And
right. It certainly does do better that way. And it seems to me there's been times when I was able to select more than one thing. Sometimes I'll actually make things as multicams, even though it's not a multicam.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just synced a bunch of stuff last night where the audio portion ran full length, and then I guess it was spanned clips on the two cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just found.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so you just select all that and make one giant multicam. But then what I'll do is I'll open up the multicam editor and I'll collapse all of the camera A's onto one track, just, you know, one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the B's, and then put the audio on the third track, and
that's the really good thing I find about the compound clip sync clip thing as well is that you can have as many clips, you know, because audio often they'll just let it run for an hour, and you can just pop all your clips on top of that audio within one clip, essentially. I did quite a cool thing on this last job actually with a multicam. It didn't quite work, but it almost worked. But
okay, tell me what didn't work.
So I was, on the commercial, I was doing. This is the one I've just finished.
Right.
I was doing we had the track, they gave us all the stems for the track. So there were about 16 different stems, you know, like the bass, the drums, all the different elements for the track. Right. And I'd normally have each of those laid up on a track in Final Cut 7 or Final Cut Classic. I'd have them each laid up, and then I'd, you know, if we wanted to dip in and out of the different, you know, just go to the bass line, I'd enable and disable different bits. What I did was I put them all together in a multi-clip. So I sort of ganged it all together in a multi-clip, and then in my timeline, it was just one audio file. And then I could just expand audio components, and all 16 things sort of pop out there in the timeline.
Ah, very nice.
And then you can then sort of scrub over each layer individually. So the director was like, "Oh, so at this point, what's going on the bass line? What's going on the drums? You could just listen to those portions, and then duck the audio or pump it up for those different bits." It was quite.
Now you say multi clip, but you mean a compound clip, right?
No, I did. I actually did a multicam clip.
Oh, really?
Because I did it as a compound clip as well. But with a compound clip, when I wanted to edit it, I'd either have to break it apart, which would then mean making a new compound clip if I wanted to, you know, compress it back down again.
Oh,
or
yeah.
I would have to step into it, and then you can't see the picture you're cutting to.
Good point.
Because it was just... but when, you know, expand audio components, when you can just see all the different mics that are within the thing, if you do that on a multi-cam clip now, you can see all the different audio layers.
Yes.
So I could then edit them as well with edit the volume on each of them. So it was quite cool. Actually, that's something I'd really like on compound clips, actually, is that if you could sort of expand it within your timeline so you can see what's inside it and edit it, but
right.
Then close it back down.
Yeah.
So do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The audio components feature is an interesting one, and I have yet to really need to deal with it. But I was talking with somebody recently, and they were explaining how they used audio components, and it's really like one of those things where it's like, yep, totally glad that's there. Even though I'm not actually using it today, I know that those features are there, and it's just nice to be able to expand something out and make a few, you know, nips and tucks, and then squeeze it back together and have a nice tidy timeline.
Yeah, I sometimes completely forget I've even got them.
Yeah.
Someone will say, "Oh, can we've got the we've got like a lapel mic or a boom mic on that section." I'll be like, No, we've just got one clip.
Right.
And then I realize it's because Final Cut's bundled it all into this nice little one little green track for me. And then you open it up, and in there you've got all the different mics from the different cameras.
One nice little green track. Yeah, I remember doing a multicam. It was like three, maybe four camera back before some of the audio stuff was more, you know, tidy, let's say, and just being completely bagged by it. Like, because that's exactly what I needed to do. I needed to be able to expand it out to get at the components, and I couldn't back then.
Yeah.
But,
oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things about Final Cut 10 that's you have to keep reminding people that, you know, if you don't like it today, give it a couple weeks, because there might be an update on the way.
I know I had it downloaded from day one, but I think the first time I probably worked with it on a live job was probably 0.9.
Yeah.
So it's quite a long way down. I mean,
A ton of stuff got added in those first nine releases.
Yeah. That's the really exciting thing, actually, with Final Cut. And the reason I kind of want to stick with it because it feels so great at the moment is that for the first time with a program, it feels like they could add almost anything. I know that's not true, but because it's this whole new thing and all these new things keep appearing.
Right.
It's like I feel every time there's an update, there could be something like that no one's ever thought of. Or you think, you know, you can go on and suggest there's that feedback page on the Final Cut website.
Yes.
Sometimes
it's think, actually
maybe
inside
just...
the app. If you're in the app, go to the feedback thing. And now I will say it's definitely worth our time as users to participate in the discussion.
Yeah. And it really feels like it's something like they could add anything, you know, within reason, because everything's so new and it's like, the stuff they've added already, I'm just trying to think of some of the most recent things. But I'd like the new whole blade speed thing.
Oh, yeah.
I never would have thought, blade speed, that'd be a cool thing. I don't you know, and the way it works with handles now, you know, with ramping in and out of the speed effect.
Isn't it cool?
It's really cool. But I never would have requested that as a feature. I never would have thought that that would be a handy thing. You know, I would have probably said, oh, it'd be really good to get some kind of graph where we can see. And now, someone came into my edit the other day and I was showing them that feature, the blade speed.
Yeah, so do me a favor and explain blade speed for somebody that's never seen it.
So in Final Cut 10, when you Command R, you bring up the, I don't know, what is it, the retime menu, where correct. You can just drag the clips, you can drag them out. And what you used to be able to do is you'd physically cut the clip and change. So if you want it to go from 100% to 200% in the middle of the clip, you'd normally cut the clip, change the speed of the second half, and that was that.
Yeah.
Whereas now you can do a blade speed where it doesn't blade the clip, it sort of just blades the speed. And then you can stretch out the second half of the clip and it's still within one clip.
Right.
And you get these little sort of gray handles that you can extend, to show how long you want it to ramp up to that speed. Yeah, and I remember someone came in and just said, can you see a graph where you can see like 0 to 100 and do you remember it? What it does in Avid, and that's what it used to do in Final Cut 7.
Right.
And I was like, no, it doesn't do that. And they were like, oh, that's annoying. And I just said, well, actually, why do you want that?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, I think the answer probably was because that's how it used to be.
That's the way it's always been.
Whereas now, it's so much easier. You want to just look on a timeline and push and pull those shots a little bit more.
So I had something really interesting happen this last week. I had a guy on stage, and he's giving his big final wrap-up speech thing. And then he says his last line, and there's a bit of a pause. And then he says, thank you, and he walks off the stage. Now, the music, however, had right at that moment where he said his big final line, there was this nice lull in the music, and then there's this big giant guitar chord that rings out longer than his pause before he says thank you.
Yeah.
I'm like, piece of cake, blade speed, drag that thing out. So basically I went from 100% to about 30%, and then right before he says thank you, I ramp it back up to 100% right at the end of the guitar chord.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
And it's like visually didn't even notice it. And frankly, I didn't even bother to turn on the optical flow feature.
You know?
Yeah. And so it was like, yep, that's good. That'll do. Let's go. Moving on, you know? And it was just so easy and fluid. And I think that's the thing that I like about the timeline is when you learn some of the, I'll call them the rules of the road, right? When you learn those rules of the road, the timeline becomes very, very fluid. I was just talking with my cab driver the other day about traveling around the world. And I asked him, I said, have you ever been to England, Australia, or Japan and driven on the other side of the road? And he goes, oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. And I told him about an experience I had in Australia where I almost killed myself because it's dangerous. And and it's a little bit like that. Not to say that Final Cut 10 is dangerous and you can kill yourself, but if you're trying to drive on the other side of the road, you gotta be careful.
Yeah, if you haven't sort of played with it, there's like an odd switch that goes off in your head, I think, when using 10. That because generally it works the same, and the magnetic timeline should be just. Now it seems really easy to understand, but there was a time when I'd do something and I'd be like, everything's now out of sync, or, everything's 5 seconds longer than it should be.
Right.
But I think after you play with it for a while, there's something switches in your head and you just get it. Nothing ever, I've done music videos in it now and I've never knocked anything out of sync down the timeline.
Right.
You know, and I'd just be, I don't know, you get really used to the way it works.
So,
and it just works really fast, I think, after a while. But it's not when you think about the time. I was talking to another editor about this, and I was saying, "Oh yeah, you know, I was mentioning that phrase you use, the climbing. Oh, what do you call it? The learning wall. The climbing wall. I almost said.
Yeah.
The learning wall is that And I was saying that, and I said, oh, the timeline's so different, the magnet. And he was like, well, it's not really that different, is it? You still do in and outs. You still extend. You still, you know, trim things up or down or whatever.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, a ripple, a magnetic timeline, in Final Cut 7, you used to do shift delete, and that would ripple, like ripple delete a clip or a section.
Right,
right.
And it's just that it's the other way around with Final Cut 10.
Yeah.
When you press it, if you do, in a way, that's all they've done. They've switched the other way around. So rippling is the sort of dominant mode.
No, that makes perfect sense, because when you shift delete now, it leaves a slug there.
Yeah.
You ever do
that? Exactly. Yeah, I do that quite a lot. Yeah.
It's like, oh, no.
The other thing I've just got into recently as well is I can't remember what the command is, but when you lift from the storyline.
That would be command option up arrow.
Yes, that one. I use that all the time.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, once you've got your edit in a place where you don't want the length to change, or you're at 60 seconds for the ad or whatever, you can just, you sort of pop like 5 clips out of that section. And do you know what? I think, I don't know when they did this. I think it was in 10.1, but they now jump up into a secondary storyline. It used to be that, say you got 5 clips and you lifted them from the storyline, you could then lasso them and make them a secondary storyline yourself. Whereas now, they will automatically jump into a secondary storyline.
Do they really?
If you get clips that are next to each other, let me just try it. I've got it in front. If you do it with clips that are not, any clips that are next to each other when you lift from the storyline, it's in a secondary storyline instantly, which is so handy.
Huh. I was just doing a whole bunch of editing, and I did not notice that this last week.
So what I quite often do now is I'll say I'm working on a little section, these 5 shots. I'll jump it out of the timeline. Sorry, jump it out of the storyline and, you know, be trimming and extending, and it's sort of rippling that little section. But it doesn't matter because it's in its own storyline. And then once you get that to length within the section again, you just all command down arrow and they all drop back into the timeline.
Right. So this is the term that I have kind of come up with, and I refer to it as editing kung fu. I mean, it's just there's these little tricks that you do when you're moving stuff about on your timeline, and it's like, you know, if you just, okay, so let me see, I'm selecting 3 things. Holy crap. I have not noticed that.
It's really good. I just noticed it one day. And then also you don't have to then, for ages, I only found this last week, for ages, when I wanted to put them back in the storyline.
Yeah.
I was lifting them from the secondary storyline.
Yeah. Now you,
like with up again.
Yep, yep.
And then dropping them back in.
Right.
But actually, if you can select the secondary storyline, you can drop them straight back in from there into the primary. You don't even have to lift them out and then drop them back in.
So what you're saying is you select multiple clips in your primary storyline, hit command option and up arrow, and it pops it up into a secondary storyline, and it's already, I don't know why, I call it shrink wrapped. It's got the little black bubble around it, right?
Yeah.
So then the next thing is there are times when you want those things to be separate. So if you command option up arrow again, it takes it out of the little shrink wrapper.
Yeah, and then they're just sort of like loose in the timeline, and they, you know, when you extend a clip out, it won't push the other clip. It won't ripple it down. It will just move it out, lift it out of the way.
But then again, command option down arrow, and it shoves it back into the primary.
Do you know, and that has made, well, I was thinking, well, what did I normally do? What would I have done in Final Cut 7 with that? And what I would have done probably was stack up clips and have, I'd end up with like a little sort of stairway and then have to like go through and slowly, holding shift down, like compress them all back down into one layer, which I probably wouldn't do for 3 days time. And you just get this really messy time. Like Final Cut 10 has made me super neat.
I totally agree. I have said that many times. My timelines are so much neater now.
Well, you know, a couple of the older school, a couple of the sort of more senior editors where I work, they used to work on just one layer anyway in Final Cut 7, because that's the background they came from. It was like, you know, this is the decision I'm making. I'm going to put this in here. And, you know, and because I sort of came from I did a lot of editing in my bedroom and sort of taught myself quite a bit of Final Cut 7. I had a lot of sort of messy habits, which I think is fine. But
did now they chastise you?
Well, not really, but I think not really. Maybe behind my back, I don't know. But now when I look at anyone else's timelines and I see stuff stacked up, I'm like, but because like now, you can't really see the flow of an edit when everything's all over the place. you can't see the pace of a cut. You know, I can look at my file. If everything's on one layer, you can look at it and you can see where it starts to get faster or slower, or particularly on a music video.
Right.
So actually, I think it's really handy to be able to work better in one, you know, just on one layer, basically.
I will say that one of the things that I used to do a lot, and I do sort of miss it, is that I would do things where, you know, obviously, you know, my basic story spine was on track one, typically putting my B-roll on track two. And then a lot of times I would set up, like, you know, graphical transitions, and I would just push those up to like track three, or, you know, maybe it's three and four because there's a title layer and a background layer. And I would do that so that when I hit shift Z and I could zoom out and look at the whole timeline, I had a really good assessment of how, you know, the pacing of the piece was, because I could see it very clear as a bell. Like, yep, there's a graphic. Oh, look at that. Section three looks a little short, because you could see it, because you see that stuff up on track, you know, three and four. And I will say that I kind of miss that, but by and large, it's really nice when your timelines are neater.
Yeah, and actually, that's just reminded me of something. One thing I used to do in 7 a lot, and I think the only reason I haven't done it yet in 10 is because I haven't done that many of that type of jobs. But when, like, on a music video, I would often, my first thing would be to, if it was a performance video, would be to go through and select all the performance stuff and have like a base layer of all the best perform, you know, have a cut that's entirely the performance, you know, even if there's narrative, other stuff to go over the top, I'd make a performance cut first.
Right.
And then I'd sort of have my narrative over the top of it, so that any time when the director's like, oh, I think this narrative thing needs to come on the first chorus, you can pick it up and move it and know that below it there's great performance from that section anyway.
Yeah.
So that's one thing where in 7 I used to definitely use more than one layer for that. And I think I just haven't really done a job like that in 10 yet. But then I'd probably use secondary storylines.
You have these little modules of story that you could pick up and move about.
Do you know, actually, one thing that'd be really cool is if you could... It annoys me a little bit that you can't use the keyboard I use keyboard shortcuts quite a lot you know, when you can sort of select the ingoing edit or the outgoing edit with the square bracket keys, I think.
Yes.
And you can select the roll edit as well with the backslash key. So, you know, in Final Cut 7, I'd normally be clicking those edits and then using the keyboard to extend or, you know, extend the edit point. Whereas in 10, you can do it all on the keyboard completely.
Yeah.
But that only works for the primary storyline. If I've got a secondary storyline, I have to select the edit point, and then I can use the keyboard. But I can't.
There's a lot of things that you can actually do in the secondary storyline if you have it selected.
Oh, really?
So, like, if you just select, if you select the bubble, you know, the shrink wrap, as I call it. And so the highlight is around the whole thing. Now you go back to your browser and you start, you know, JKL, you know, zipping around, and you hit the letter E, it will append that to the end of the secondary storyline.
Oh, really?
You should probably, definitely play with that. And I'm not saying everything works the same as the primary, but a lot of stuff does.
But you couldn't, one thing that would be really nice is if you could do it in and out, which you can't. Yeah, you definitely can't do it in a... Because actually, one thing I do quite a lot is if I'm, say, I'm playing through an edit and you get to a point in the shot where you think, right, I want to cut out at this point, I'd often just hit an in point and delete.
Right.
You know, to in and out and delete the end of that thing.
Right.
Which you can't really do that in a secondary. But that's cool. But then I don't know how it would work if you... All these things that everyone keeps requesting, I don't know how they'd work actually in the new... sort of in this new world. Final Cut 10 wouldn't be what it is if they'd gone around and asked all Final Cut 7 editors, what would you like in the future? Because when there were rumors about Final Cut 10 or the next Final Cut coming out, there was like rumors. I remember people saying, oh, it's a one window thing. And I was like, well, how's that going to work? We need two windows for this. And, you know, and I remember thinking, all I want is an Animat tool and maybe some motion tracking. That would be really cool. Make it 64-bit. Like, that would probably have been what I would have asked for in Final Cut 8 or whatever it would have been. But I never would have come up with this, you know, like the way the browser works now.
Right.
I never would have thought that was, even when I first started using it, I was like, I'm not going to use thumbnail view. I'm going to use list view because that's what I'm used to.
Right.
But I use thumbnail view all the time now. It's amazing.
I use thumbnail if I'm looking at B-roll. I use list view if I'm looking at anything else. I tend to go back and forth between the two.
Yeah, I switch quite a bit, actually. It depends what I'm looking at. But, yeah, one thing I wanted to say, actually, was how I've been trying to work out, me and a couple of the other editors where I work, I'm trying to work out what makes Final Cut 10 so fast. And it's not that it's really quick at rendering or anything like that. Because of the way they've shifted the way it makes you work. And I can't put my finger on any one thing that makes it, the reason that makes it so quick. But I think it kind of, you don't ever have to stop working with it. Like when I select now, I go through and do favorites right. in the, you know, and you just kind of go, your JK and L, you go in, out, F for favorite. You don't ever stop and you carry on playing in, out, F for favorite.
Yeah.
And whereas I used to sort of have my clip in the source window, go JK and L, in, out, and I'd sort of select into a timeline. And then you'd write it to the timeline. In Final Cut 7, you then had to click back into the viewer. So you'd sort of, you'd do an overwrite edit, click back into the viewer, JK and L, in, out, overwrite, click back, you know, so there was all this clicking back and forth.
Right.
Whereas now you just kind of, and also the way they've done the keyboard, I really love the new keyboard layout. So you can, for your right hand, doing JK and L, and your left hand just hitting F or append E or...
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because I'm kind of the same way. I've had this philosophy about keyboard shortcuts over the years where I, you know, there are some people who will highly modify their keyboard shortcuts. I know that I've spoken with Scott Simmons in Tennessee, Nashville, and he, no matter what edit system he uses, he's highly modified the keyboard shortcuts so that it's basically the same keystrokes in any edit system. But I'm kind of with you. Like I'm willing to listen, to sort of take the suggestion, the stock suggestion that's provided, you know, the factory settings, if you will. Because I have a fundamental belief that the people that are doing this are not stupid. They're not throwing darts at a dartboard to decide what command to put on what key.
And so I think especially with this release as well. Because it's been built from the ground up.
Yeah. You're providing this template. So let me see what is in your mind. And I have to agree. I know that there was, you know, overwrite and insert and stuff like that in Final Cut 7. But because of where they were up on like F9, 10, and 11.
Yeah.
I never used them.
No. I did, but yeah, it seems really stupid now that I'd be either like leaning over and pressing this other button that you had to, and then if you're working on a laptop, you had to turn off all the
right
like volume settings and all that.
Exactly.
And then because that annoys me because I want to use the play thing on iTunes or turn the brightness up. So yeah, whereas now yeah, it's really great. I think they've actually done a really good job of where all the keys are. It's really good.
Right.
How much do you add keys?
Just a couple.
There's
a couple that I've added, and I think that's a tip that I give people all the time is that, you know, if you're bored, open up the keyboard modifier and just start snooping around because
I do that all the time. You know, whenever I use a feature, I kind of think, oh, I wonder if there's other things you can do. Because there's so many things that they don't tell you about that are just hidden away in there.
I think, okay, so my philosophy about that. Well, it's actually my observation of Apple's philosophy is that I think that Apple wants to be very powerful for guys like you and I, but they also want to be very accessible for dads with their, you know, kids' soccer teams, you know, they're doing their Weebelows videos or something like that. You know, I mean, they want to be more accessible to the prosumer, and so they don't want to muddy up the user interface with too much stuff. Like, you know, you've sent me photographs of your office, and I know that, you know, in a typical setup, you have, you know, you have your, you know, your, I don't even know what all the pieces are called. There's the effects browser down in the lower right-hand corner. You can turn on the larger audio meters.
Yeah.
You have the inspector open. But mm-hmm. close all those things and close the timeline index, which is one of my favorite features. Close all of those things, and all of a sudden, Final Cut looks really comfortable to use.
Yeah.
Like you, I could envision, you know, teaching my brother how to do this, you know, or maybe even my mom.
Yeah.
But when you open up all those other panes, all of a sudden it's like, ah, that's a little too confusing now. But think about it. When you first open up Final Cut Pro 10, all those extra panes are closed.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to be more accessible. But it's the same thing with the keyboard shortcuts, that there's a lot of extra stuff in there. So what other features have you turned on using keyboard
shortcuts? One thing I've found is that you can set custom shortcuts for changing the speed of a clip. So there's like I've got a shortcut for Maker's clip 2x speed.
Oh, really?
And that is amazing how quick that has made. Because you used to, well, like in Final Cut 7, you used to right click, or what was it, Command J or something, then you type in 200%. It was like 200% is something I use all the time because people shoot 50 frames. Well, over here it's 50 frames.
Right.
You know, like double speed, you know, for a bit of slow-mo. And occasionally you want to bring it back up to real time.
Yeah.
So like 2x speed is something I do all the time. And I've now just got a shortcut. I hit it and it's done.
Right, right.
The clip is 2x speed and that's it. Whereas it used to be you type it in, you tell it whether you want to ripple or not, and you do all the custom, you know. And it's amazing how that saves so much time. So I've done that. And I've also got a shortcut for reverse speed as well.
I made one for blade speed.
But, yeah, do you know what? I have mine mapped to shift B.
Yeah.
I think maybe I listened to you and just did that. Because the other day someone was like, oh, how do you blade speed? And I was like, oh, would it shift B? And they're like, no, it's not. Yeah, I've got the same thing. And then actually, the thing I picked up from you guys as well was the...
toggle color board?
Toggle the color board, which is so good. I've got that as Alt-C, I think.
I think mine is Alt-C, I think maybe I mentioned that on the show.
What else have I got?
Yeah, who knows? You know what would be really great is if after some of these conversations, Apple actually adds some of these commands into the stock keyboard setup.
Yeah.
Yes, Shift-B is a good one.
Another one I set up recently, because I was just exporting a lot of XMLs, because we were working sort of collaboratively on this job with an assistant editor. So I was exporting quite a few XMLs of projects, sequences, whatever we're calling them.
Right.
And so I set up like Command-Shift-E instead of Command-E for export thing. And that was so much quicker rather than going file, export, XML, blah, blah, blah.
Very smart.
I can't think what else I've done. I'm sure I've set up a few other things, but I know one of the other people I work with has set up a new keyboard shortcut for, you know, what's it called? In the keyword editor, you can set different keywords to go down for different, sorry, I'm not explaining this well.
No, you're talking about like control one, control two.
Usually. Yeah, I think he's remapped whatever control one was, and you know, so something near F. So he favorites all his stuff as his selects, and then he'll go through the favorites and sort of do a, you know, refine his selects more with the keyword.
Oh, interesting.
So like, you know, like, I don't know, whatever you'd call it, like selects of selects, you know. So he has that set up so he can carry on. Yeah.
So you're bringing up a very good point. Earlier, I had sort of gotten the indication that you were like the rogue Final Cut 10 editor at Trim. Are there other editors?
yeah, there's a couple of other guys who are using it. I think I've probably there's about three of us at the moment who are using it on smaller stuff.
And to get your stuff out and off to color, you're using XML?
Yeah, but they, like all the places we send them to, they want EDLs really because, you know, I'm working with, we get sort of delivered ProRes proxy footage.
Okay.
Which is the way we used to work in 7, or if you're an Avid, it would be like DNX 36 or something, I think. So we get like lower res HD footage. So, you know, once they need to when they want to conform back to the full res stuff or the Alexa or whatever, we just send an EDL off to the post house and they'll sort of rebuild the edit. So I'm using EDLX at the moment, which is really good. you export an XML and then you import that into EDLX and it just makes an EDL instantly pretty much.
And that's who makes that plugin?
I can't think. It's on the App Store.
Oh, really? Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's on the App Store, which is really good. And then the other one I use quite a bit because for sound as well, I still have to, we have to send off OMF files.
Right, right.
Which is kind of annoying because I then have to send it back to Final Cut 7 to do that, which bugs me every time because I'm like, I kind of want to put Final Cut 7 to one side and be done with it. Kind of go into Final Cut 7, I'm like, oh, look at you. But yeah, I really wish I didn't have to use it at all. Actually, you know what you were saying about how all the, you know, you get like hidden features, all the different hidden functions on the with the interface.
Yeah.
That it makes it look, you know, friendly or, you know, user friendly. I think, I kind of think it's the same with the philosophy of the whole program, actually, is that Final Cut 10 is almost like an editing OS in some ways. And then you buy the basic package for however much it is, $300. And then if you want to, if you need to use EDLs, which most a lot of people won't ever need to touch, you just pay for a $50 app that makes EDLs for you, or you buy, you know, you buy the plugin that where you can do, you know, an Animat or a tracking tool. You know, and you sort of bolt on these different things. It's like Final Cut 10 is like the core package.
Well, I think one of the things that Apple has done really well is they've created this ecosystem where it's very profitable and very friendly for third-party developers to develop these additional tools.
Yeah. And if you, well, if you just think, when I was thinking about Final Cut 7, you'd pay £1,000, and I probably didn't touch 80% of the features in Final Cut 7.
Right.
You know, and you think, actually, now, and it's not that Final Cut 10 is stripped back at all, because that's what it sounds like I'm saying, it's not. But, you know, if you really need to make an EDL, there's a solution for that, and it's quite simple.
Right. And you're, and frankly, you're the first person in 29 episodes that I've spoken to that needed to make EDLs.
I know, it's really antiquated, isn't it? I wish we could just send off an XML, and because I think most of the post houses are using a base light to grade with, which doesn't accept a Final Cut 10 XML or maybe any XML.
I was going
to
ask you that. I know that a lot of people, at least in the States, are using Resolve.
Yeah, which just works amazingly, doesn't it?
That's what I hear, yeah.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like you've got, if you need those extra things, like I've bought SliceX. Do you know about that?
Right. The tracker, yeah.
The matting tool and tracker, yeah. So I've bought that, and I've got an EDL thing, and then I've got X to 7 as well. So that's probably not more than like £150 worth of plugins.
Right.
On top of the £200 I paid for the app.
Not bad.
So it's still, and now it does everything I need it to, and that's still, you know, five times cheaper than Final Cut 7 ever was.
And what's interesting is back when it first came out, people were using that as a complaint. Like, oh, you have to buy this and you have to buy that and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, well, yeah, but do the math.
Yeah,
before
it's great.
You sit there and complain and whine, do the math. It's still cheaper.
Yeah. Do you know, there's something I wanted to, like, this is a really inelegant segue, but there's something I just wanted to talk about in the browser.
Sure.
It's really bad, just clunky gear change. But, you know, one thing I found is that when I used to select, I used to put my clip in the viewer.
Right.
Insert onto a timeline, then I'd have a selects timeline, or actually no, I'd have like a string out of, you know, I'd just chop the heads and tails off clips and
Right. Have
a string out, and then I'd copy and paste between timelines, you know, to make my selects, then to make my edit.
Right.
Whereas now, my first pass, I just go through the footage and reject all the stuff, all the slates, all the stuff where the camera's on the floor, reject all of that. And then you hide,
shoot the camera on the floor a lot, do you?
You know that. Well, you know what
I know
mean.
What you mean.
Someone's
I'm
like messing about in the shot or in between.
Yeah.
And then you just hide rejected and it all disappears. And then you're just looking at your usable footage. And then I'll go through that and then I'll favorite all the stuff that I want to use. Or, you know, I think I might, that will be my selecting process. And then just the fact that you can switch back with keyboard shortcuts between hide rejected, favorites, and those, you know, those different options, which I think is like Control H, Control F, and Control C.
Right.
It's so quick to jump between those between those different options. Like if you, like if I'm going through my selects and the director might go like, oh, well, I'm sure after that bit you selected, there was a really cool bit where something happens, and I can just press Control H and suddenly it's not my selects anymore. It's all the clips.
Right.
And it continues playing. It continue, like if you're playing a favorite right, right. and then you go hide rejected, it continues playing through that past the end of that favorite.
Yeah, my preferred way of dealing with stuff like that, and I have a good reason for it. I actually still quite often will make a string out of all the B-roll.
Do
and,
you?
Yeah, and here's why. So I'll shuttle around and go, up, oh, yeah, that looks good. I'll blade it before and after the bit I like, Command Shift up arrow, I'll pop it up a layer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I do that is so the stuff that's up on the second layer is the stuff that I'll copy and paste into my actual working timeline. And the reason I do that is it gives me a very quick visual representation of what I've looked at, what I've selected, but more importantly, what I haven't looked at or what I haven't selected. And it happens a lot where a director will go, no, I know there was another shot. So like, okay, well, let's go over to the B-roll here. Everything that's down on the first layer, that's the stuff I haven't used.
So, yeah.
And to me, that lineup like that, if you will, or that string out, it's just it's a very comfortable way of working. That being said, there's a lot to be said for the hiding and the favorites and the keywords. And I use those as well. But when it comes to just sifting through a whole lot of B-roll, I still use a string out myself.
Yeah, because I get a similar thing when you've got the film strip view up and you hide rejected and you've got all the little green bars for the bits you've selected.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just skim to the moments in between and you can see the stuff you haven't selected. That's the sort of way I use it. You can see all the moments in between.
Right.
You can sort of see that in the browser, the bits you haven't selected, because you've got the green bit strip for your favorite, and then the bits in between for the bits you haven't touched.
Right.
So that's quite I just like how dynamic it is that you can just switch that.
But even browse. Still, at that point, you're looking at it for a clip.
Well, no, I often have, I have like a key, so I'll have a keywords collection for each scene or for each day or each, you know, however I've keyworded it. You know, maybe like you've got a scene in a studio and I've got a studio keyword.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you're looking at it in browser mode, in icon mode.
Yeah, with the film strips, yeah. And then all my rushes are sort of broken down into all the different scenes. So when I go into the, I don't know, whatever it is, we've got the studio scene, I'll go into it and I can, with the shortcuts, I can flick between looking at all the shots or I can flick between just my favorites.
Right.
And you can just sort of see it. I like how dynamic it is.
Yeah, I'm going to...
And then when you add a favorite as well, it's like in the old world, you'd have to add it to your selects roll. And would you add it to the end or would you add it in the middle? Whereas this, when in favorites, it's just there.
Right.
Because you can... Do you know what I mean? You can add stuff later to your favorites and it will be there in context in the middle of.
No, I clearly, I'm going to give that some thought. I hear what you're saying.
Because I started working in sequences a lot in Final Cut 10
uh-huh.
because I wanted it to be sort of familiar. And I'm not saying this sounds like I'm saying you're doing it wrong, but I'm not at all. Just like, but I find that every time I try and embrace the new way it works and just try and forget, I guess you get the same as well. You just, if you, the more you forget, the better you get in Final Cut 10, I think.
The thing I love about this application, though, is there are plenty of ways to work. It's not necessarily a right way or a wrong way. There might be more logical ways and more traditional ways, but I totally agree with what you're saying. When you let go of the way you used to think, quite often, the new paradigm, the new metaphor, the new thought process actually will save you time.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, it's really good.
I don't know if – I think I did a tutorial about this. Do you use the timeline index much?
I've started using it a bit. I can totally see how it's amazing, but I haven't – I think the same as you. I haven't quite got my – head completely around it.
Well, there's a trick that I started doing, and I do it a lot, and it saves me a gob of time. So go back to what I was saying about how I'll do my string outs. I'll lift up my selects. I'll lasso them all, copy them. Mm-hmm. And then I'll toggle over to my working timeline. And sometimes I'll just paste them all at the tail end of my timeline. Now, yeah. because I copied them off the second layer, they will paste into the second layer over a slug. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what I might want to do is I might want to collapse them all. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's what I do. I select them all again, and I force them down into the slug, command shift down arrow.
Yeah.
Now go to the timeline index and you will see it'll have, because there was space in between those selections, there'll be a clip and a gap, and a clip and a gap, and a clip and a gap, and a clip and a gap. So use the find tool in the timeline index. Search for the word gap.
Yeah, and that's now, great.
Only the word gap. Select all of those, and they're all selected in the timeline.
Hit then you can just hit delete.
Hit delete, and you've now collapsed all of your selects down.
Yeah, that's
pretty cool. Isn't that slick?
That's amazing. The thing I used it for recently was before I was sending it off to audio, I needed to break apart all the sync clips.
Right.
And because it adds synchronized clip to the end of the clip name,
yeah.
In there, I just type sync.
Yep.
And then it just showed my sync clips. And then without even clicking to the timeline, you can use the shortcut just to break apart compound clips, and they all just popped apart. The audio popped separate from them.
Very cool.
So that was really quick as well. But I think there's a lot more I can do in there, but I haven't sort of worked out enough. That gap clip thing's great though. Because what I probably would have done is gone through and clicked all the little gaps and tried to delete them all.
Yeah, you click one, delete, click one, delete, click one, delete. Yeah, my way's faster.
Yeah, it's much faster.
And again, it's those kind of little tricks and tips that you hear when you talk to people. It opens up a huge horizon of possibilities. And it's just, I find this application to just be a treasure trove of, you know, great discoveries, sometimes on a daily basis.
Yeah, same here. And I think there's so many small changes that may have huge effects, I think. Like one tiny thing that I've only just noticed recently is, you know, when you put an endpoint, say you're halfway through a clip and you put an endpoint,
yeah,
it automatically sets the out point at the end of that clip.
Yeah.
Now in Final Cut 7, it wouldn't do that. You'd then have to, if I wanted to delete the end of that clip, I'd put an endpoint, I'd press the down arrow to jump to the end of the clip, then I'd go back one frame, then put the out point.
Really?
And then press delete. That's how it would work. If you wanted to do that in Final Cut 7, that's how you do it. Or you could set in an out point around the whole clip and then just set the in point. Right. Whereas in Final Cut 10, I just put the in point and then I can press delete straight away and it deletes the end of the tail of the clip.
Oh.
So that's removed like three keystrokes for me instantly.
Well, do you ever use, I don't even know what they call it. Let me see if I can find it.
Is it Shift X, the extend edit or extend?
No, I use Option and the square brackets.
Yep.
So Option left bracket and Option right bracket will top and tail your clip.
Yeah. Do you have to have the clip select? No, it will just do whatever the... Yeah. Just
wherever the playhead is.
Yeah, I should get into that.
Again, we find something that we can both be working on. No, top and tail I use all the time.
Yeah, that's really handy actually, isn't it?
Yeah, so like, you know, you're playing a clip and a guy starts to talk and you go, whoop, whoop, you know, just scale back, you know, scrub back just a little bit, top that, mm-hmm. scrub down to the end of the waveform, tail it, done, move on.
Yeah.
Never even taking your hands off the keyboard.
No, that's really cool, isn't it? I think if you can do as much as you can without taking your hands off the keyboard as well, that's when you really start to get quick, I think.
Editing 101, I always tell people, you know, if you do something 3 or 4 times in an hour, figure out a faster way to do it.
Yeah. How do you find audio generally?
Find audio?
How do you find it works in Final Cut 10? Is it good for you?
Oh, I love it.
Because I always hear people saying, oh, Final Audio is terrible in Final Cut 10. But for an offline perspective, like for me, I find it brilliant. it's so fast just to, especially if I'm doing something with, well, I'm doing a bit of sound design with.
Well, here's the number one thing I like about the audio in Final Cut 10. When you're up in your video timeline, you're dealing in either base 24, 25, or 30 frames per second, by and large. But if you're editing in the audio timeline, you're editing at, I believe somebody told me it was 80 frames per second.
No, I think it's actually, I think it might be 80. I think it's 80. There's 80 frames for one video frame.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even more.
It goes like down to the sample rate. So every frame, I think there's 80 steps on audio, I think.
So if you scroll in or if you zoom in and you start grabbing the end of clips, you can make easily, let's just say safely, we're doing subframe audio editing.
And
so now you can edit, like if you're editing music, you can get in, the music edits are much better. And if you have your audio selected and you're dropping markers in with the letter M,
I heard you talk about this before.
They're much more accurate than if you were dropping markers on the video track.
Yeah.
And it's all in the same app. You don't have to leave the app to get subframe audio editing.
No.
Okay. So like when I'm editing music, or extending music or shortening music, it's way easier in 10.
Yeah.
I use the gain feature, which is, you know, in the effects tab. I also use the limiter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find, and I, you know, my audio friends are going to roll their eyes at me, that really just sort of in the default setting, I will put that on dialogue, you know, to sort of roll off the tops of things.
Yeah.
Then that way I can get a little more gain out of the gain plugin, or just, you know, the rubber band audio, which I don't tend to use very often.
I just find for building in the timeline as well, for building like an effect, like a sequence of, if you're trying sound design, you know, you've got a load of different effects and some music, and just to build those things up is so quick because you don't have to move. That's where the tracklist thing is amazing, because you're not having to, if you want to extend an audio clip out, you don't have to move all the other clips out of the way. You just extend it, compress it, and everything jumps around.
And right, which can be a little unnerving if you're not ready for it.
Yeah, but once you sort of get your head around it, it's amazing. And actually, you know when you move the connection point of a clip?
Yes.
Because it, by default, it's connected to the first frame in the audio is connected to wherever it is in the time, you know, whatever clip it is. But quite often now, if I've got, I'm trying to think of an example.
There's many times where having it connected at that first frame can be problematic. Like if you want to move that shot, but it's in sync with other stuff down the line, and
like,
it's important.
And also, if you've got a sound effect of, say, someone's foot hitting the ground, and I've got two or three sounds that I've layered up to hit when the foot hits.
Right.
But the foot happens in the center of that shot. I move the connection point to that, so it's in sync with, so the sound is in sync with that frame in the picture. And then when you edit, you know, because the sound might start three shots before that moment. So then when you edit those shots before, it always stays completely in sync.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
If I explained that well enough, yeah.
That's command shift and click on the clip, and it will move it will move its connection point.
Yeah, I think it's maybe command.
No, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Command option, yeah. I said the wrong thing.
And also, I don't know if you noticed this, but if you've got a video or audio as well, say you've got a secondary clip, or what do you call it, a connected clip.
Yep.
If you have the connection point in the middle of the clip, when you change the speed of that clip, it ripples around the center.
So say
I've got a connected clip and I make it 200% speed. Normally, if the connection point is at the front of the clip, the back end of the clip will pull in. Whereas if you've got the connection point in the middle, when you like dead center, when you make it double speed, the front and the back pull in.
Oh yeah.
Which is one thing, I'm trying to think of a thing where that's really handy.
Well, actually
the same thing. Like say you've got an action in the middle of that shot that is synced to something in the primary storyline.
Yeah.
If you in the old days, when you sped up a clip, it would then be out of sync. So you'd have to, you'd speed up double speed, then you'd have to nudge the clip back into sync.
A punch in a fighting scene.
Exactly. And then, whereas with this, if you've got the connection point on that punch, when you speed the clip up, it just sort of ripple, you know, it, and it will do it proportionally. So if it's a third of the way in, it'll do the front and the weird, do some weird thing where it, you know, it does it the right amount. So that frame is always in the same place.
Timeline kung fu.
Yeah.
Gotta know how to use your connection points.
Yeah. I think once you understand how they're working as well, it makes a lot faster. Like on this last job I was doing, I had a section of the music that was in sync, like halfway through the track. That's the point that needed to really be in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And the front of the track was just sort of some strings building up, and it wasn't cut exactly to the music. So I had the connection point halfway through the track. And then when I was working on the front, I didn't have to think about anything being in or out of sync because I knew that that track was locked to the bit it needed to be locked to. Does that make sense? So if I'm trimming clips at the head of the edit, it didn't actually matter because it's not knocking the stuff out down the line out of sync.
Right. Something that I ran into this last week when I was working Fast and Furious, I was trying to change my connection points.
Yeah.
You know, command option clicking on the clip, and it wasn't changing. It wasn't changing. It wasn't changing. And I realized I had the caps lock on.
Oh, is that because I've sometimes had it where it hasn't worked, and yeah. I assumed it was just a bug.
Try the caps lock.
Okay.
It may have been that.
It may have been that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That does turn it off.
And then, have you done any with 10.1 now? You can make custom frame sizes. Have you done any of that?
Yeah, I haven't really because I'm almost exclusively working like 1920, 1080.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't needed to. I saw your thing the other day actually where you had that huge wide banner thing you were doing.
Yeah, it was 200.
Just a ridiculous.
215 feet wide by 25 feet tall.
Oh. Yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
It was pretty ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, on audio, I quite often lasso a group of clips and then use control plus and minus to change the volume.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time.
So quick, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I find myself doing it while the edit's still playing now and it doesn't stop. And then the edit, like, I'll do it and change the volume on a clip.
Yeah.
And then the director will say, I think that clip is... I'll be like, yeah, it's done, it's done. And then we'll press play. You know, the second it stops, they're like, I think that, yeah, it's done, it's fine, it's done.
Did you see the tutorial I did a couple weeks ago about real-time editing?
No, I didn't.
It's kind of a circus trick, if you will. I mean, there are some features that I show that I actually do use in real life. But what I did was just sort of as a proof of concept was I wanted to show how much editing you could do while the playhead was running.
Yeah.
And I do it a lot where, you know, we'll be playing along and we'll hit like a, you know, a graphic point where the music wants to swell. And I listen to it. I'm like, yeah, the music could come up a little louder there. So the playhead goes past it and I'll go back and I'll select the audio for that section. And here's the trick. If you click on a piece of audio, it will stop the playback. But if mm-hmm. you swipe a piece yeah. of audio, it won't, the playhead will keep going.
Yeah.
So
do you know what, and in Final Cut 7, I think you could adjust the volume of a clip while it was playing if it was yeah. already selected.
Yes, you could, that is you true.
Could, but it didn't work that well. You'd get sort of like, you'd hear it stuttering and...
Yeah, so so while I'm playing, like I'll do this during like a play out, you know, you know, for a director or something. It was like, okay, let's see what we got so far. And I'll he'll say, we want to make that music a little louder. So I'll do it on the one that just played, and then I'll, while the playhead is still playing, I'll go and select the other music swells and bop them up before the playhead gets there.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, it's truly amazing.
Am I right in thinking you can pretty much do anything as long as if it's rippling? Actually, so if you're changing something where after when the playhead's gone past the point, you can change things there. But if you do something that ripples, it sort of messes up the playback.
Well, the playback is going to stutter a little bit. But let's face it, we're not laying stuff off the tape, so it doesn't really matter. But no, you can rearrange clips underneath the playhead. You know, I mean, just the thing I always say is hit play and just start seeing how much you can do. You could do a lot. You know, you can lasso a few clips ahead of the playhead and hit Command T and put in some dissolves and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, right before the playhead gets there.
This is something never to admit, but the amount of times I sometimes forget to, oh shit, I forgot I was supposed to duck the audio on that thing. And you just, you know, you see it, you're doing a playback and you're like 30 seconds in, you don't want to stop it. Yeah. But you see this thing, it's like a cliff coming up and the train's running out of tracks. And you're like, whereas now you can just go in without anyone noticing and just duck it back down again.
Yeah. Now, do you use the little dots to duck your audio?
I do, but I use the range tool quite a lot now as well.
Yeah.
What do you mean the dots? Like the keyframe.
The keyframing of the audio, yeah.
Yeah, I use the range tool now as well just to like, because to duck a section, you have to put in four keyframes and then duck the middle bit down.
Well, see, what I do is I actually just blade at the beginning and end of it, pull it down, and then do a transition at the two blade points.
You know, if you do, with the range tool, if you select the middle of a clip and then you duck the audio in that middle section, it automatically puts in all the keyframes for you.
Understood. But by making the blades, I can actually change the EQ as well as the level.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. But how would you deal with that do you have to make it a secondary storyline?
In the audio, like let's say I have a music track and I want to duck it for dialogue or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you lay your music down below, Command G, we'll put it in a storyline. No. Option G?
I think it's Command. I think Option is...
No, yeah, it's Command
G. Compound clip, isn't it?
Command G puts it in a storyline. And now... And frankly, that's the way you want to edit your music anyway.
Yeah.
By putting it in a storyline, you gain all the benefits of all the rippling. And you can, you know, like mark measures or verses and option drag off versions of them.
Yeah.
To loop things and make it longer. Again,
something I found recently with doing it that way as well is that you can, I always thought we have to do a cross dissolve and you can't, it's always then set to that. The cross dissolve is sort of equal amount of time either side of the cut.
Nah.
But if you know, like if you double click the audio, you can like expand and then you can do like a split, you know, like a, what do you call it? Like an L cut or a J cut. You can do that with the audio and then extend it by quite a long way. So you can almost have two tracks of audio within a secondary storyline,
right?
Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean? I don't know what it's called. You know, when if you double click the lower part of an audio clip,
and it expands out the component.
Expands, yeah. And if you do both sides of the cut of a cut point, you can then extend it like so. I've now in a compact in a.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Storyline.
You can almost have like two. So you can have one bit fade out really, really slowly over the top of it instead of just over an edit point.
Yes. I think we should wrap this up. We've gone a long time. This has been a great discussion. I didn't get to talk to you about traveling, but you know, I think maybe we should talk again sometime.
Yeah, we should.
If people want to find you, Thomas, what's the best way to find you online?
I am on Twitter, but I don't really use it. I don't post much, but I'm at Thomas G. Carter.
Okay.
And you can find all our work at trimediting.com.
Okay.
I guess that's the best way to get a hold of me, actually.
Perfect. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a Twitter observer. That's fine.
Yeah, definitely an observer.
A lot of good information there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks, Chris.
Well, it sounds like I'll have to have Thomas back again sometime. We never did get to talk about traveling with gear, And we also kind of glazed over some of the XML sharing. So I think that's a conversation that should be had again. Most of us, I think, tend to do all of our finishing inside of Final Cut 10, but he's obviously using the EDLX utility to get his EDLs out and send them off to Baselite. If you know somebody that should be grilled, by all means, contact me. Let me know. And if you don't hear back from me, contact me again. It's okay. Sometimes I get busy and I lose messages and stuff. So, you know, feel free to bug me until you hear from me. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. And we will be back next time on the Final Cut Grill. Later.